Okay. The tonight's shiur,
Pharaoh's hardened heart: perspectives on free will. So this is something that could really be a lifetime course, or like a 3 or 4 part series. I was just last week trying to think of what topic, and I just kind of came to mind and said, you know, let me just throw out a few sources, at least as a starting point. Maybe we'll get back to it in a couple of months. Just throw out sort of the basic Rishonim, one of the basic approaches to the problem of divine intervention versus free will. So just on sources on this, so Maimonides is a good source, that's one. But in terms of modern day things, so there is a friend of mine who actually was my colleague, whatever. He sat next to me in the base medrash for many years, my age. He was on the hockey team, I was on the medical team. So by Aryeh Leibowitz, who I think lives in Eretz Yisrael now. So he wrote a book entitled Hashgacha Pratis, where he goes through sources. It's somewhat technical, but if anybody would ever like to borrow this, you are welcome to. So that had part of tonight's shiur. And that there's two major books that I've read in the past. Sifsei Chaim is with Rav Chaim Friedlander, who is the Mashkiach of the Panovich Yeshiva. So he's one of these people who are zocha to more svarim being written by him after he passes away than when he was alive. When he was alive, there were three. The famous Sifsei Chaim are there's a set of three svarim on Moedim. On the holidays is a three volume set on the various holidays throughout the year. So after he passed, it was three volumes. And then after he passed away, there's now been another 5, 6, 7 volumes. They keep coming out with new things. Basically, going back to his notes, to his shiurim that he gave over the course of his lifetime, and going back and putting them and compiling them in order to form a new svarim. So this little double set here, one is called Emunah v'Hashgacha, what we have to believe, and what is the Hashgacha, I mean, what providence does a Kaddish Baruch Hu have. And the second one is Emunah u'Bechira, right? Emunah and the choosing. So Hashgacha and Bechira, the idea of Hashgacha's Pratis, that a Kaddish Baruch Hu cares and has control over everything that happens in the world, versus Bechira Chavshis, versus the idea of free will, is one of the big challenges that come up in this week's Parsha, and in many weeks' Parsha, and probably, you know, in our regular emunah, what does that mean that God is in charge, and that's always a constant cause of conflict, etc. So we threw together a couple of sources on the topic, and we'll see at least crystallize the question a little bit more. If maybe have some more peace of mind afterwards. You have a source. Okay, good. So the premise that we're starting with tonight is that there is such a conflict. Right? I don't really want to get into the first 3 quarters of this book is defining what it means to have Hashgacha Pratis. What does it mean that Kadosh Baruch Hu has control over the world? So that is not where I want to go tonight. Like, we're just going to take that kind of granted, that God has some level of control. We'll see where it is, but that God has some level of control over what goes on in the world. That is, we'll take that as a somewhat of a granted. And the second question is that, well, how do you know that we have free choice? So we know that we have free choice based on the pasuk in Chumash. That's the first source on the page. Hayidasi b'chem hayomis hashemayim b'saris hachayim v'amavis asati l'vanecha habracha v'haklal. Kadosh Baruch Hu says you have testimony today that in front of the heavens and the earth and those that are living, those that are dead, I place in front of you blessings and curses. U'bacharta b'chayim, and I want you to choose life. L'man tiyah tavizaracha, for so that you shall live, you and your children. So uvacharta v'chayim, there is a commandment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, free choice. You choose life. So if we didn't have the opportunity to choose life, we really weren't choosing. If we like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God was in charge of all of our different things that we needed to do. So then the pasuk doesn't make any sense. The verses, we would never be making a choice. So obviously there's some level of choice, and intellectually we come to things more from that angle, at least this side of in Western culture, right? We have more trouble understanding the other part. Right? We have more trouble, we kind of come from the point of view of a quote unquote monotheistic a point of view, both within our religion in general. I think we've spoken about in the past that Judaism, I'm not sure we would define necessarily as monotheism. Monotheism means that God is separate from us. Right, but we at least come from that perspective based on the way we've, you know, we've grown up and probably from the, based on the people that are around us, etc. Right? So we have more of a easy time understanding that we have the right to choose. We have the ability to choose because that's what we do every morning, right? We choose what to have for breakfast, we choose what to have for lunch, we choose whether to make a bracha or not to make a bracha, we choose whether to get out of bed, we choose whether to go davening, put on tefillin, etc. The other side is a little bit more complicated. The Amar Rabbi Chanina is a Gemara in Chulin that says, "Ein adam no keif etzba'o milmata, elaim kein machrizin olav milmala." A person cannot move his toe unless it has been pronounced from Akadosh Baruch Hu, based on a pasuk in Tehillim, based on a pasuk in Mishlei. And then Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Dam Nikuf Miratze Kedam Ola. That if, therefore, that if a per, if that if once we accept that idea that a person cannot stub his toe, a person cannot hit his toe unless it was established from above. So then, if a person begins bleeding from their toe because they stubbed their toe, so a person should have in mind, this is like a korban. This is like I said, just as a kaddish bar, just as in the good old days used to bring korbanos for atonement. So this is like our korban for atonement. This is in a way, the, just as the blood that's coming out of me is like the blood of an ola. Rava adds in a little bit of a caveat. Begodol yaminu v'nikuf hasheni, whether it is the right big toe or the small left toe or something, v'hu deka'azil l'davar mitzvah, as long as he was going to do a dvar mitzvah. This really doesn't apply all the time, it seems, right? Pasha pshat, simple explanation. What does Rava say? It doesn't necessarily apply all the time, but he's on his way to do a mitzvah and something happens like that, then obviously you should be, you should have some level of concern. Okay? So, the main point that I wanted to show the Mishnah Gemara, I just thought the second line is very interesting. The main point I want to see is that there's clearly a concept, and we could bring another 20 Gemaras that seem to example, you know, demonstrate this concept. Just want to just bring one paradigm that everything is done, God runs the world, right? It's another Gemara that a piece of blade of grass doesn't grow until a Kodesh Baruch Hu says grow, right? And there are other Gemara, there's the idea of the guy who gets, who can get killed because, the murderer who walks underneath a ladder and a guy falls, right? There's a lot of different demonstration. That's an accepted part of the Gemara, but yet it's also an accepted part of the Gemara that we have free choice. So how do we just understand that conflict a little? That's what I want to talk about. Yeah.
This conflict between Rabbi Eliezer and Rava, may even, I don't know if Rabbi Eliezer is intending this, but he's sort of saying that you could even have free choice in having your bleeding, because you could sort of make yourself bleed volitionally, and then you'd be doing it with free choice. Whereas Rava is essentially saying, no, that's going to happen. It's not free choice, because if you're going to do a mitzvah and you bleed, then clearly you didn't make yourself bleed. Nothing you could do, because if you stop to prick yourself on purpose, then you're no longer going to the mitzvah. So Rabbi's way of interpreting it sort of would say there is no free choice, whereas Rabbi Eliezer is saying there could be free.
Why are you saying he's saying it's free choice? He's saying that if you stub your toe,
well,
then
because he's not excluding the possibility you may do it on purpose.
I don't know about that. I don't think you take another look at the context, but I don't.
Rabbi's way precludes that you could be doing it on purpose. Rabbi Eliezer's way would.
I'm not sure that that's. We can take a look inside later. I'm not sure that's the way you read Rav Elazar. Okay, so what is the general? So there's the way we call it, the from view and the not as from view, right? There is the right. Whenever you have a conflict like this, well, we'll see. But whenever you have, you'll see what I mean. Whenever you have a conflict like this, right? So right, you seem to have two immovable forces, right? So there's. So really, this is why I tell my Talmidim, my students, TA all the time. Whenever you have a conflict like this, you either have to say, well, you know, you either have to knock down one or you have to knock down the other, or you have to readjust one or readjust the other, or readjust both. I mean, sometimes you might be readjusting both. But you either have to, be looking, which one are we going to readjust? So are we going to say that, well, Akash Baruch Hu runs the world, and obviously we just don't, even though it seems like we have free choice, we have to somehow mitigate what our free choice is? Or do we say, well, we really do have free choice, and the idea that God completely runs the world, doesn't quite mean that way. Right? Which one are we going to kind of tackle a little bit? And we'll see that there's really an approach to tackle both. So on the side that everything is really comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, so there's a long line. We'll throw this source. This source is found in this sefer, in the sefer Sifsei Chaim. So he quotes this letter. I don't necessarily have the toldos of Rav Zundel Misalant, but the letter is Rav Zundel Misalant. But he writes like this: Shamati mihaga mirenu harav. Somebody maritz mi kavna from the kavna rav. Amar harav agon rav. Rash Bahag, Roshi Shiv Be'er Hagol or something. Moreno Rav Chaim Zal Mivalajan. The only word that's spelled out is where he came from. Rav Chaim Mivalajan, he means. Rav Chaim Valajaner. Shamati Me'achas. Rav Chaim Valajaner, of course, was the main Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. So this is coming from the Vilna Gaon, the tradition from the Vilna Gaon. But Gamani Amarti Kina Filuminarosai. Shazet Tos Mashimurgal Befia Olam. Shabal Bechira Yachulas Sosla Adam Bilti Gezeres Habori. That it is mistaken notion in the world that a person can do something without a gezeres habori, without the gezer of Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Rak shebechol davar nigzor ala adam be'eze even yingov. For everything, it's been established, been gozer on a person, what stone will be moved. Aval b'bal b'chira lo nigzar eze bal b'chira yasalo l'tovu l'mutav. This is already kind of the next thing. But a bal b'chira, somebody who has a choice, it's not gozer on him, it's not established which bal b'chira will be doing it. Aval im lo nigzar lo mina shemayim, ein bal b'chira yachal asos lo ma'uma. I mean, it may not be clear who's going to do what to whom, but if something wasn't established in Shemayim that was going to happen in a certain way, it would not be happening. Right? That is the hard line. He opened up a little bit, meaning, you know, it could be, there might be different options about who might do it, but he's concentrating on the everything is Mina Shemayim, everything is from the heavens, and the fact that you have free choice, that's just an illusion. Okay? Continues the another source would be for this idea. So how do things get done? Right now we're already starting to get on to, well, okay, you know, how do things happen? How do things? Yeah.
So would this mean? Let's say, would he be saying that the Chorban of the Beit Hamikdash is determined by God? But the fact the Romans did it versus someone else.
Right. So we'll get into the rest of the Rambam talks about with regards to, well, that's on the bottom of the page. Right. You're on the right track.
Well, I don't understand. If Hashem decrees everything from Shomayim.
Right.
Therefore, why doesn't, like we say that Hashem wants you to take life, but he wants everybody to do the right thing rather than say, quote,
Well, God has ideas. I mean, God has ideas that everything, right, that Israel will go to Mitzrayim, right? God said it was going to happen.
That I can understand all that, because that's part, say, of a master plan. But the overall thing is that there seems to be, if God wants you to choose life, which it means to follow the correct path,
right?
So why then is there are so many people, you know, abrogating or walking off the path?
Maybe that's his plan too.
That's the challenge.
Yes, but conceptually, that's difficult to conceive.
Well, it's difficult, right? Well, it's difficult. But which part is difficult to conceive? God gave a choice. And he made it. There is something there.
That everything is decreed from Shemayim.
Right.
Correct.
And
if Shemayim decrees everything, then why doesn't Shemayim decree that everybody perform in the proper or the derech of the correct derech?
So I didn't want to go there tonight, but that gets into why did God create the world? Why did God create the world? God created the world to allow for a perfection of the world. That at least there's the again, the Litvish version is God gave the world because God is a God of chesed. And the more Kabbalistic / Hasidic version is that God created the world to allow for it to be perfected. And that God, if God, I think we've spoken about this in Shul before, certainly, that if God is a perfect God, put it this way, if God is perfect, can God become more perfect? Right? So that itself, that's a... That's the word I'm looking for. That's a paradox, what?
You can't think in terms of that.
You can't think in terms of that, but just think it through for a second. That's a paradox, right? If God is perfect, that means that there's no room for God to become more perfect. On the other hand, if there's no room for improvement, if God does not have the ability to perfect God himself, or herself, whatever, if God does not, God is lacking the ability to perfect himself, so then that means that God is lacking a certain ability. So how does God perfect himself? So through creatures that have the ability to choose the ability to perfect themselves. And who's that? That's us. Right, so that's what it means that we are we're messengers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. Okay, so there is a story in Maseches Tainus. Kashibikesh Torainus laharog es lolainus upipus achiv belodkia. What is going on here? Who is Torainus? So, if anybody went to at the Rav Shechter Shir in the one Rav Shechter gave Shir Lower Merit Synagogues, he talked all about Megillas Tainus. He talked about this source that's out there for all these different holidays and fast days of the course year. So, one of them is the holiday of Torainus. So, what's Torainus? So that's what the Gemara wants to know. So, this is the story of Torainus. So, there's a little bit of a background to the story that Rashi says, just to understand what's going on here, that a woman was found dead in some city. Torainus was blaming the Jews and telling the Jews that if you don't show us who killed this woman, we're going to kill all of you. So, Lulainus and Pipus were the ones who were perfect, I think. They were considered belichet. And they presented themselves. You can kill us as opposed to whether you're it's mutter to do, whether you're allowed to do that, whether that's not for now. But that's what's going on here. So Torainus is about to kill Lulainus and Pipus. Amar lehem, ime'imu shelchanani mishal ve'azariah atem, if you're really Jewish, if you're from the nation of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Who are they? They were the three people that were thrown into the furnace, right? And then they were walking around and everything was fine with them. So yeah, so if you're connected to them, so if you're Jewish, so let your God come and save you, just like God saved Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah from the Nebuchadnezzar. So Amrullah, they said back to him, nah, it doesn't quite work that way. Mm-hmm. See, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were tzaddikim gemur. They were complete righteous people. And they were fitting for a miracle to come to them. And also happens to be that Nebuchadnezzar was a melech hagun haya. Nebuchadnezzar was a rightful king. And Nebuchadnezzar, there's all a bunch of stories. Nebuchadnezzar is known to us as evil. But there's a whole literature about what exactly happened to Nebuchadnezzar at the end. At the end of this story, specifically, he said, wow, Baruch Hashem, that's amazing that he was able to save Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So just for that, he's considered a melech hagun hu. They said, well, Nebuchadnezzar was a pretty important person. Somewhat of a righteous person. V'roy lasos neis al yado. And therefore it was befitting that there be a miracle performed through him. Right, meaning by him throwing them into the furnace, in a way he was performing a miracle. Right? The Oso Russia had you too. He said, but you're nothing. But ain't no royal asos ne salyado. And it's not befitting that a miracle come through on your hands. Vanunis chayvu kule lamakum. And we're chayiv, meaning on the assumption that we actually murdered this girl, we are chayiv. Vim ein ataho ragnu. Oh, and by the way, if you don't kill us, Harbe Horgimisho Lamakum, Akash Baruch, who has a lot of murderers in his stable. HaKadosh Baruch will be able to figure out a different way to kill us. Bahar Be'dovin Va'rayos Eishon, he's got plenty of bears and plenty of lions. L'makom Bo'olamu Shepogin Banu Bahorgin Osanu, that he could come and have attack us, and he will have and come kill us. Ella Lomasar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bi'adecha El She'atid Lifar D'yamei. So why did God put us in your hands? Ah, he put us in your hands because in the future, Lifar D'minu Mi'adecha, D'minu Mi'adecha. In the future, he wants to avenge our blood. So that's where you come in. So after giving this little fear to Tyrannus, Afal Pikain Horgu Miyad. Even though he got this little bit of a speech, Tyrannus killed him immediately. So Amru, it is said, Lo Zazu Misham Achebo Diofle Meromi. They did not leave from there before these Roman officers came, Ufatsu Esmochu Begizrin. And they split his head open with clubs. Meaning right away these Roman officers came and killed Tyrannus. Meaning as a demonstration of some kind of hashgacha. But the very interesting thing that we get from this Gemara is that, yes, we see that Kadosh Baruch Hu does have full control, kind of, does have full control, but not in terms of what happens to me, but not necessarily that you have to do it. That's what they're saying. Kama harbe horgim yesh lo lamakom. There are many murderers that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has. I mean, God could figure out a different way of doing it. So yes, you think, oh, you're going to kill me. Ron, as a murderer, is going to say, oh, I'll murder you. I'm really doing God's will. No, it's not. God's will might be that I be murdered.
Right.
But God's will is not necessarily that you be the murderer. Yeah.
But then you're going to have to choose that certain events are worthy of God determining, and certain events are not as important and are going to be a more haphazard kind of thing. And where are you going to draw the line? For example, if it's important that I get murdered, so whether he does it or she is immaterial,
right.
God's will, okay, but maybe one of these two, it's important for them to be in jail.
Right.
Something else that they're
right.
going to do. And then something else and something else.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean,
so at the end of the day, you'll get a big headache. Which is why God's in charge,
right.
not us.
Right, but let's say, for example, if you want to, you know, in our time, you say it was God's will that we retook Yerushalayim. Okay,
right.
Fine. Well, then it's also God's will we retook another part of the West, Bank. Well,
right.
Maybe we should because it was in Torah. Is it God's will we took the Golan or
right.
the Galilee or this? And where are you going to draw the line?
Right.
Or where's God's will that this
right. So in fact, at the end of the day, right, like the Bills player a couple weeks ago who dropped the pass in overtime, right, and tweeted that, oh gosh, God did me this time or something like that. So I was prepared to talk about that at Shabbos, but I passed on. But but in effect, he's right. I mean, I happen to think that like sporting events happens to be a very convenient way for God to transfer fortunes from one part of the country to another. It happens to be that that's a convenient way of doing it. Right, at the end, if you think about this too much, if you think about this too macroly, right, it does become too much. That's not our job, That's not our job. So we bring it to this question. So this concept of harbi horgum yeshu lamalkum, that God has many ways of doing it. So that is what the Rambam uses to answer this question. The pasuk tells us that he said to Avram, right before he became Avram, God spoke to Avram, kigir yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem, that you're going to be a nation, a stranger in a strange land. In a land that's not yours, and you're going to have to work, and you're going to be oppressed for 400 years. And by the way, the nation that judges you, I will judge them. And afterwards, you'll become very wealthy. So the question is, so why would the Mitzrayim get punished? Right. I realized after I prepared this, I said, wait a second, I didn't really actually talk about Paro's hardened heart. I didn't go there, but I did talk about. But we are talking about the idea that what does it mean that why would the Egyptians be punished? Right. Why would the Egyptians be punished if it was preordained that the Bnei Israel was going to go to this land? So the obvious thing you see from that pasuk is what's missing from that pasuk. Mitzrayim, right. The word Mitzrayim isn't there, right? So the idea of harbe horgum yeshu lamakom, that there are many murderers in the world, so it wasn't going to be Mitzrayim. It could have been something else, right? So that's a very easy way of trying to fit it into that Gemara. So let's see what the Rambam, however, says that no, it had to be Mitzrayim, right? If you look at the Rambam on this page, I know it's a long Rambam, but ba'alo kasa b'tor b'avnu b'anu atem... The Bnei Yisrael was gozer, that they were going to work for somebody, right? So why are we? Let just see that for a second.
Rambam did underline
it? No, yeah, right. Hare Gaza Mitzrayim Lassos. Hare Gazar al Yisrael Lavod. Oh, Lavod Avodah Zarah. Hare Gazar al Yisrael Lavod Avodah Zarah. To worship Avodah Zarah. Why were they punished? Okay, I'm not sure what that is. Why were they punished? So Lefi Shalo Gazar al Ish Ploni Hayodua Shiyehu Azona. This is the underlined part. Because it was not Gozer on Shmerel the Mitzri. Shmerel is not a Mitzri name. Bob the Mitzri, he did not have to do it. Shalo Gazar al Ish Ploni Hayodua Shiyehu Hazona. El Kol Echad Ve'Echad Me Osan Hazunin Lavod Avlavod Avodah Zarah. Ilu Lo Ratza Lavod Lo Aya Oved. Because it was not.
He's talking about two different.
He's not talking about midstream. Okay, I'm sorry.
Two different things: the midstream and the people.
Right, right. Same, right, right. I'm sorry. That's why I was getting confused. Okay, why was he? What's going on? I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not, and the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu prophesied, not prophesied. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent the prophecy that Bnei Yisrael was going to worship Avodah Zarah over the course of their time. Right. So why would Bnei Yisrael be punished for worshiping Avodah Zarah? Right. The pasuk says you're going to be worshiping Avodah Zarah. Why would they be punished? So the Gemara. So they're answering that. That yes, it was true. God said that there would be people that worship Avodah Zarah. God never said that Shmerel would worship Avodah Zarah, and God never said that Bob the Mitzri would enslave the Jews. It's like God said, you're going to have some tzaddikim, you're going to have some rishayim. So a Russia can't say, oh, you see, God said there are going to be rishayim, so I volunteer to be one of those rishayim. Right? That doesn't make sense. Right? That doesn't give a person a right to be a Russia. That's just stating a fact that there is going to be a Rishayim going on in the future. So that's the Rambam's answer. It's V'chin HaMitzrim. There you go. Okay, two lines before it becomes italics, just to the Mitzrim part. V'chin HaMitzrim, kol echa v'echa, me'osan HaMitzrim, b'ha'me'irim li'Yisrael, that caused pain to Yisrael, il lo ratz olahar olahem, harashis b'yadu. If he didn't want to do it, he didn't have to do it. Shlo gazar al'ish yadua, ela hodiya shesof zaro us li'ishtabit be'aretz, lo lahem. Right? But it was not said that who would do it. It was said that at the end of the day, it's going to happen. And we've already said, which we'll get to a little bit later, that we already said that we don't really understand these things. Yeah?
I mean, I'm sure statistically this would work out, but if you carry this to its conclusion,
right?
Hypothetically, if everyone in the world, if you're going to have tzaddikim and rishayim,
right,
and use the plural, and everyone but two people suddenly became tzaddikim, well, then those two who are left really would have a claim to say, I can't become a tzaddik now. I have to stay as Russia because you're supposed to be tzaddik. Or if there's one left.
Right, so I think at the end, and this is the Yosef question, which we're not getting into tonight. We're not. But the Yosef question is, why does Yosef think that he needs to do God's work for him? I mean, Yosef says, I'm going to construct a way for my brothers to come and bow down to me so that the dreams will be fulfilled. Right, so we said in Shul that it wasn't to be fulfilled, but whatever. We explained it a little differently. But that's the basic question. The basic question is, why is Yosef's responsible? Why is it his responsibility to make sure God's prophecy comes true?
Because he figured out to do it. It seems like, from what you're saying, is that God runs the world. There's certain things that are going to happen.
Right.
And somebody's going to do it. It doesn't mean somebody has this person or this person or this person has to do it, but somebody's going to do it.
Right.
So maybe that's the part that doesn't matter. Maybe the important thing is God runs the world.
Right.
And somebody's going to do it.
Right.
Somebody's going to do whatever it is that God needs to have done.
Yosef had this thing that the prophecy had to be fulfilled.
Right. So where did he get that from? Where did he get that from? He's got a Miles problem, right? Miles is like, well, so you know, that's not our problem. We don't have to see that God's prophecy will come true.
He was able to do it, though. He had the power to do it.
But why? No. But the question is that look what he violated in order to do it. He violated Kivud Avim. He didn't tell his father that he was alive, right? He drove his brothers absolutely nuts, right? He captured, you know, he held some of them captive for a while, right? He violated Isurim in order to do this. Right, so what gives him the right to do that?
He was the viceroy.
No, that might give him the what gives him the spiritual right to do it.
Well, because he need, all right, so if you look in the Parsha, he needed to see whether or not they really
Right. So you already heard Rabbi Gruss's drush in Parsha's Vayigash.
No. But if he got to see it, Yosef had the forethought.
Right.
He's in prison for 22 years. He had a lot of time to think about it. But when he came out, he saw what was. He saw an opportunity, like Boss Tweed in the Tammany Hall. I seen my opportunities and I took them.
I don't know. What's his opportunity?
He was supposed
maybe
to.
Maybe it's that the person who decides to do it might. That would determine if it's done with less suffering.
Okay. That's a different answer.
In Megillas Esther, Mordechai tells Esther, if you don't do it, somebody will.
Right.
There's going to be more suffering along the way.
Oh, he didn't say that.
But you're going to be destroyed.
No, he was saying...
We'll all be killed, but only the Savior of State Salvation...
Well, Revach V'Hatzalah Yamon La'yudim Mimakom Acher. He said, if you don't do it... Esther is safe. Hold on, I'll tell you. Megillas Esther... Yeah, you'll be destroyed. Okay, I don't know why he would say that, but Esther was in a pretty safe place at that point. Esther was the queen.
You were saying that she wouldn't fulfill her mission.
Right. That's what it is. Your spiritual life will not
happen. There's going to be more suffering along.
I'm not sure that's what it means. God will figure out a different way to solve the problem. Right.
Well, then why
do it
matter? Then why wouldn't Esther say back to Mordechai, well, the hell with it then? It's going to happen anyway, and it'll be the same in the end, you know?
No, because she will not be fulfilling her mission in life. She will not gain fulfillment. She will not be living the life that she's supposed to be living. Right? We'll get to that a little bit later. The Ravid gives the Hasagas of the Ravid here gives two different. He asks the question on this. He says, kind of like Miles' question. So hold on a second. If God said that somebody should do it, so then fine. So if God declared that such a thing should happen in the world, right? Like a king who says, I need the garbage taken out. Right, so nobody wants to take out the garbage. But if nobody takes out the garbage, then it is a problem. The Ravid is almost saying it is man's problem. Man, if God declared it, so then go ahead and do it. So the Ravid gives two different answers. Number one is the underlined part towards the bottom. The Indian ha-mitzrim eina she'ela mishnei panim. The question of the mitzrim is not really a question for two reasons. Ha'echad ki adavri yadua she'ein ha-borei niframi adam ra el gurami menu. That first of all, he only asks people that are already evil to be doing doing this stuff.
That's not fair.
Okay. V'ilu, however, the Ravid says, V'ilu, go back to the second underlined part, Shamu l'Moshe b'tchila v'shachlu es Yisrael, if they would have listened to Moshe in the first place, right? Moshe came back at the end of Parsha Shmos. Moshe came back and said, let my people go, right? And then they sort of said, all right, I guess God said it's time for us to let you go then. All right, well, it's time to let you go. Right? Lo hayu lo kin v'lo tava b'yam. Nothing would have happened to them. Aval zedonu shel paro ubizuso es habore yisparach lifnei shlucho hu garam lo. But the fact that paro caused them more problems and disparaged God along the way, that's why he had to get punished.
But how can you be punished?
I'm not sure in the beginning.
The first five Makos Paro had free will.
Right.
And
the last five did not.
You gotta check the phone. But I think in the beginning he was.
But if he let the people go,
but he also thought himself a god, so that was the problem.
But if Paro had let the people go with the second play, whatever. There would have been no reason for Mitzrayim to be judged, and it wouldn't fulfill God's prophecy of "I'm going to judge."
Let's see. What did he say?
The
God is actually Dana Nochi.
Egyptian treasure.
Right. Exactly. Because that was their wages for all.
No. They only said it's time to go. You know, can you maybe give us some money? Oh, okay.
But they wouldn't have been judged. They would have been.
It could have been. Okay, so maybe it would have been punished a little bit. Well, Don means they would be judged. What does it mean they would be judged? Maybe they would, if they would have said right away, fine. you know, okay, you're Judge Lakova, you did your job, Yisha Koach. In the beginning, so Moshe shows up. Where is it? Moshe shows up. V'yomer al paro, komar Hashem l'kei Yisrael shalachas mi v'yachudu li b'midbar. V'yomer paro, mi Hashem asher yashma v'kol. Who's this God? That's his answer. The answer is, who's this God? I don't believe you. Right, so that's in the beginning. Right, so God, so it's his own. There's no reference to the idea that he hardened his heart. So at that point, he would have said, "Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Why don't you go have a good time in the field?" And then what? Maybe the pasuk is, and then they will be judged. How will they be judged? They'll be judged Latova. They did everything like they were supposed to do. Right? They were supposed to subjugate the Jews for a while. They were supposed to drive them crazy. They were supposed to make them be slaves. Right? They did that. Great. Okay. Shkayach Mitzrim, you'll have everlasting riches.
Well, they went way beyond that.
But they would wait. That's the second answer. Va'asheni, and the second thing is, Kiabori Omar, that God said, V'anuosam, that they will be afflicted. V'heim avdu behem befarach, and they did even worse. They put great burdens on them. V'heim misu mehem, and killed them. V'tavu mehem, and ki'inyon shenemar, they drowned them, and all that thing. Nikapatsi ma'at v'heim azulara, that I gave them a little bit, and they went nuts. They went so beyond what a Kadosh Baruch Hu had in mind, so therefore they deserve to get punished for that. So far we have three answers. Right, number one is the Rambam's answer that it's on each individual mitzri. Right, then you have answered that each individual mitzri didn't have to do it. You have the first answer of the Ravid saying that, well, if they would have, the problem is that they kept them there too long. And you have this. That's the first answer of the Ravid. The second answer of the Ravid is that the fact that they subjugated them so much more than they otherwise were supposed to. The Ramban gives another answer, one answer on this concept, that first he says, the second answer of the Ravid, he says that they worked them too hard, and then he says one more thing, he says, Aval kasher teitzi ha-gezeira al pi navi, yish ba-osa osa dinim, that if the gezeira would have come, the second paragraph of the Ravid here, if it would have come from a navi, and they would have done it like that, they would have heard it from the navi, that would have been one thing. Kim shama osa v'ratz la-sos if the Navi says to them and says, guys, this is what you're going to have to do, right? You're going to have to subjugate the Jews for 400 years. Oh, well, God wants us to do it. We'll go ahead and do it. Right? Then there wouldn't be a sin. That would be a schus. Just like there is in the story of Malachim Beis that we'll get to in a while from now about Yehu Yana Shaiti, right? That he was doing what the Kadosh Baruch Hu told him to do, and that's why he had to kill so many people. Aval, im shama hamitzvah harag oso lesina o leshluloso. However, even if you hear the mitzvah and you kill them, not because you're following the will of God, but because you hate the person, yeshalav ha'oneshki hu lechait nischavein vaveiru. Low, you will still get a punishment for it. And even though God says that this such thing is supposed to happen, we've had this in the Navi Shul already a few times. This is probably what got Shelley so upset in the first place, right? God said that such a thing was supposed to happen, but you don't do it because God told you to. You do it because I hate the person. This is a great opportunity for us to do something to that person, right? Or this is right, and that, So that you still get a chait, you still get a sin. And we took the Navi Shir, we even went further with that, right? Even if the person is a rodef, right? A person is running after another person, right? To kill them, and you have the, and you're supposed to, they have a mitzvah to kill that person, right? And you kill them with a degree of anger. You kill him with a degree of, oh, finally I get my chance to kill him, right? So you carry a sin. And that's why this, by one of the conditions to say Lashon Hara, sometimes it is permitted to say Lashon Hara, sometimes it's required to say Lashon Hara. But one of the requirements to say Lashon Hara, right, it has to be for a purpose, and it has to be that you do, you know, there's no other way around it, right? And one of the conditions is that you don't do it out of hatred, that you do it because you don't do it. If you don't like that person you say Lashon Hara about, you should have someone else do it. Now, how are you going to tell them to... Whatever. But yeah, you're not supposed to be the one to do it if you already don't like the person you're saying Lashon Hara about. Right? That's the idea. That's the answer of the Ramban. So that's the fourth answer. Right? That the Mitzvah didn't do it because they were following the will of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why do they subjugate the Jews? Because they're Rishayim, right? Because they're evil, and therefore they deserve to get punished because they are evil. Okay. So all of these things, all of these answers so far take for granted that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fully in control, so to speak. Perhaps not fully in control to the... Well, we haven't guaranteed about the extent, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu guaranteed that something was going to happen, fully in control, that the Jews were going to be subjugated. Right, and then how that came about was maybe a little bit of a question, right? Were the Egyptians too rough, or were the Egyptians right? That was all the from Derech. Okay, now we're going to go with a little bit not so. We have some pretty impressive people lined up, but this would perhaps be understood as not as from way. So. The Or HaChaim, I didn't write down on the page, but this is the parish of the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim, this is the story of Reuven and Yehuda and Yosef, etc., right? Reuven says, why don't we throw them in a pit? Instead of leaving Yosef with all the brothers, he says, let's throw them in the pit, and, says, thank you to the Strongs, by the way, for donating the Rashi Chumash. The in memory of Neil Strong. The pasuk tells us, Luchu. I'm in the right place. No, I'm not in the right place. Vayishma Reuven, vayatzilenu miyadam, vayomer lo nake nafesh. Right, Reuven heard, and he rescued Yosef, and he said, we will not strike him mortally. So what is Reuven trying to accomplish? Right, this brings about a major question of Hashgacha Pratis. If Yosef, what's supposed to happen here? If Yosef's supposed to survive, right, so then what can we do to him? Right, if Yosef is not supposed to survive, then what's the difference whether I throw him into a pit? Right? He's not going to survive anyways. So the Or HaChaim says, this action was applauded by the Torah as man is a free creature possessing freedom of choice and able to kill people who are not guilty or have not been convicted, as distinct from wild beasts, which do not kill humans unless the latter are guilty of death in the eyes of God. The words Vayitzilehu miyadam mean that he saved them from the evil consequences of carrying out their freedom of choice. That if the brothers had full ability to kill him, even though that would have been against God's plan, so to speak, to kill. By doing what he did, Reuven nullified the brothers' statement, we shall see what happens to his dreams. Right? What's the Or HaChaim saying? That God's plan was that Yosef will lead the Jews to Egypt, or whatever the story was going to be, and the brothers had the ability to kill him. Brother, you know, and what would have happened to God's big plan? That's not our problem, that's God's problem.
But you don't know that the brothers would have killed him. You don't know that that presupposes that he thinks that God wouldn't have had the power to pluck.
Right. Okay, so your problem is next. We'll deal with your problem. I forgot to bring it with me. I don't think we have one here. No. So the Nitziv quotes the same idea, on the same pasuk, as the Nitziv has the same idea. The Nitziv wrote a Sefer HaEmek Davar, he wrote a Perish on Chumash, he wrote a lot of different things. One of them is HaEmek Davar on Chumash, and there's sometimes a sub-commentary known as the Harchev Davar. And in the Harchev Davar, would you put it on the page, and I apologize, it's in Rashi script, there's no computer, it's not in the computer at all, but it's in Rashi script, on the top line, it says, V'ha shahaya yare min ha'achim, right, the fact that Reuven was scared of the brothers, Hainu mishum de'bechira sheba adam hu lemala me'hashkacha ha'el yona, that the choice of a man is actually above the providence of God. Then man has the ability to, in a way, go above God's plan. Now, lest we completely, you know, burn this up right now, just skip two lines and go to the last line, last word on line 3. It says, "Va'omnam." However, chalila lomar she'ein biyat hashkacha al yonu lishmur gam bechiras adam. Chas v'shalom to say that God doesn't have within His ability to watch the choice of man. Elakach yesh lanu lomar. What are we saying? D'lazeh be'inan z'chus yoter. That would require more zechusim. That would require more merits. Meaning for Yosef to v'hainu sheyetov gam bein adam lechaveru v'yetzadik v'tov lo b'shvil shehu tzadik gamur. And that would require that he be a big tzadik to other people, etc., etc. Okay. Fine.
He seems to be wanting to sort of have it both ways. That man has free choice, and he can do what he wants regardless of God's plan, unless it's not really working out. In which case,
yeah,
forget it. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little unfair. It's a little unfair. Yeah, but what he's certainly going out into the realm of that man in a way can do things above God's will, and the fact that he would have if Yosef was with the brothers, in order for Yosef to survive that, right, there would have had to have been some kind of miracle. Right, they would have all had to conk out in the middle of the day, or the sun would have had to set suddenly, or right, it would have had to certainly go chutz l'teva, which is then calling the question a lot of other things. Now, there's plenty of gemaras out there about people, you know, using don't go to a dangerous place, we'll still be using up your merits and right, all these different things that are out. How do you equate it? How do you quantify that? I'm not sure you could quantify that, but we certainly see within these sources here is the concept that the brothers could have killed him. Right? It was certainly a possibility that Yosef would have been killed by his brothers, which is why Reuven had to save him. Right? If Reuven wouldn't have saved him, it's possible that Yosef would have died. What about the whole plan? What about the dreams? What about everything? That's not our worry. We don't have to worry about that. So this is that man's bechira is 99% supreme. There's still that 1% that that God could pull out in the last minute, right? That's the caveat that the Nitziv is adding here. But basically, that in the battle of Bechira Chavshis versus Hashgacha Pratis, Bechira Chavshis in a way has the upper hand. The free will has the upper hand over Hashgacha Pratis. To an extent, at least there's an allusion to that, right? One has the illusion that somebody has that power. So at the end, okay, so maybe we'll stop here. We'll do this Rambam. This Rambam kind of gathers it all together. This is the Rambam that he was alluding to before when he said, as I said earlier. So he's referring to this Rambam where he deals with the question without getting into the specifics. He says, Shema Tomer v'alo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yudea Koma Shiyeh V'Kodem Shiyeh Yadda Shizei Yeh Tzadiko Rasho Lo Yadda. Right? That we say that God knows, right, before everything, who's going to be a tzaddik and who's not. Im yada shu yeh tzaddik, yevshar shalo yeh tzaddik. Im tomar she yodeya shi yeh tzaddik, yevshar shi yeh rasha. Or yel yada daval borav, right? The Ram says if God said he was going to be a tzaddik, then he doesn't have a choice, right? He's going to be a tzaddik. There's nothing to talk about. And if God could declare him to be a tzaddik and the guy could end up being a rasha, that means that God doesn't really know the future. Right, he can't. Right? He's saying the question here. So da shetshuva she'ela zu arucha me'eret mida v'rachba mane yam. That you should recognize that the answer to this question is so broad and is so distant from the land. It's like crossing the seas. And in those days, nobody crossed seas. Right, this is before Columbus. Right. So, okay. Right, and there's many principles of faith rely on this. But just know the following. Kfar Biarn, we already said Biperek Shani Mihilchos Yisuriya Torsha Kadosh Baruch Hu Eini Yodei Medeya Shehi Chutz Mimenu Kivnei Adam Shehim Vidaitim Shaim. Realize that God does not know that such things as thoughts that are outside of Him, as opposed to man, who have second thought, meaning there's other people with thoughts. Elohu yis'ale shemo v'daito echad, right? His whole knowledge is one. Ve'ein daito she'odam yichol lahasik davar zeh al birav. And at the end of the day, man can't understand it. V'chashem she'ein koch v'odam lahasik v'limtsu amitos habo, right? Just as man can't fully grasp the truth of God. She'nemar kilo yirenia adam achai, that a person won't see me and live. Ein koch v'odam lahasik v'limtsu daito shel bore, that a person cannot be masig, they can't understand and find the understanding of God. Hushanavi Amar Kilo Machshavosai, and that's what the Navi says when he wrote, Kilo Machshavosai Machshavoseichem Lo Darchichem Derechai. My thoughts aren't their thoughts, and my ways aren't their ways. Vekeman Shekein Hu Ein Beno Koach Leido Heach Yada Kadosh Baruch Hu Kol Habruim Vamaisim. And therefore, we can't really understand how God knows everything. Aval Neida Below Safik Shemaisa Adam Biyad Adam. But we do know the following. We know without a doubt that the actions of man are in the hand of man. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu really does not control what man does. And it's not just intellectually that we understand it, but with proofs that we understand it. And therefore a person is judged for whether they're good or bad, and this is the main This is the basis of everything relied on, right? That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says we just don't get it, right? It's like reading the book. We hear read the book Flatlands. Nobody ever heard of the book Flatlands? So my brother told me about this book out there.
Oh, I think everything is in.
Right. It's about dimensions. And then when I was teaching in high school in Phoenix, so the girls all had to read this book. So when they were done, I borrowed it from one of them. And the whole book's about like 60 pages. It's like nothing. But the whole story of it is about the people that live in a flat world, that they're all flat and they're all two-dimensional things. So they could only see their neighbors either as being wide or, you know, from the side. Right, they can't see them from above, so they can't quantify who they are, right? So that, like, houses are not defined by, there's no such thing as a height of a house, it's all about length, and can you fit into the doors? And they make, for these people from Flatland, make fun of the people from Dotland, for the people that are made up of one dimension. Sorry, not that. Line land. There's line land, where it's all about lines, where they all bump into each other. And then, lo and behold, this guy has a dream one night, and they schlep him out to outer space, and say, oh, look at that! There's a third dimension to the world! Who knew that there was a third dimension to the world? So that's the same mashal that's over here. The Rambam is saying that we just don't get that there's another dimension. There's more than another dimension. But there's other dimensions that God could see. God is above time, right? What do you mean God is above time? Right? Time doesn't exist. It's all one. And we can't be masik that. The Ravid has a very interesting line here. The Ravid who's arguing on the Rambam, right? Whenever we learn the Rambams, the Ravid argues on the Rambam continuously, especially in the beginning. In the Rambam's introduction, so he writes to his Code of Jewish Law, he says that after I get done with my Code of Jewish Law, you're not going to need any other books. You're just going to need a Tanakh, and you'll need my book. And you won't have to worry about anything else. And the Ravid gets all upset. Yeah, I'll show him, right? And spends the entire book of the Rambam throwing in his footnotes, his arguments, etc. So on this one, the Ravid says, what is the world? What is the Rambam doing? He says, very interesting. You got to understand him. V'kevan shekein hu, right? Ein b'no koach leida, right? Heyach yada kadosh baruch hu kol bruma mais midayim. So Aleph Av, Amar Avram, right? The Ravid, Rav Avram ben, I guess David, I think? I'm not sure. But, what?
Yeah
Rav Avram ben David. So Amar Avram. Lo nohag zeh ha-machaber minuk ha-chamim. The Rambam didn't do a good thing here. She'ein adam maschil b'davar v'lo yadul ha-shlima. A person shouldn't start something unless he knows how to conclude it. And he raised these deep questions and left it as a question. And left it up to faith. And it would have been best if he would have just kept quiet, and not open up her heart. And maybe somebody would think about it once in a while or something. But it would have been best if the Rambam would have just left it alone. What's he doing raising this, opening this whole can of worms for us? So, but the, however, the Rambam says, but you know what, let me try to give a little bit more of an answer. Even though there's no real answer for this, let me give you a little bit of an answer. The person's righteousness or evilness to lose v'gzeiras habori was reliant on the commandment of God. Haynu omrim sheyadia so he gzeira so by salanu hasheela kashem od. That I would know. Hainu Omrim Shidia so who I just lost the place. Hainu Omrim Shidia so he gazira so Vahisalanu Hashael, we'd have a very difficult question. But now that God has given into the hands of people the ability to do things, in Yidia so gazira, that our knowledge is not established. However, it's like the knowledge of the astrologers. That they know really what's going to happen. And it's known what's going to happen. And all the things that people do, Kadosh Baruch Hu has passed on with the strength of these mazalos, these whatever. Right, and man has the ability to escape it. But on the other hand, the ability that man has to escape it, God also knows about the ability that man has to escape it. So at the end of the day, he knows. At the end of the day, God knows what's going to be going on.
Well,
yeah.
Could be, it's not that God knows what's going to go on. God knows what has gone on. And since God's time is, he can sort of travel from future and back, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So he's not predicting it. He just went to the future, saw it, and just knows now.
Right, that's not exactly what the Ravid, I'm not sure the Ravid is really going there, but yeah, he's not necessarily saying, the Ravid is just saying it's like obvious, like, you know, if a train is coming down a track and they're both coming out of the direction, anybody can see that they're going to crash into each other, right, so God is a couple steps beyond that, right, like Jason Kidd was always said about Jason Kidd that he could see four passes ahead. Like, that's what they say about Jason Kidd, the point guard in the NBA. That he could see what's going to be four passes from now. Right? So, God could see infinite passes from now.
So, what bothers me is, I know you probably don't want to go here, so my philosophy about it is like, God, time is a fishbowl. Past, present, and future are all mushed up, and God sees everything. So, I'm thinking, he knew the Holocaust was going to come. And what I can't figure out, that's why I don't like, this is my free will thing, is all these people got killed.
Right.
From this totally evil person. And God knew it was going to happen. He let it happen for whatever reason. The people that died, or the people that were rightly or whatever punished, because God wanted them. God wanted them to die.
Right.
It was part of his plan.
You're not supposed to
understand. I know you're not supposed to understand, but I'm trying to
see
into this whole
I think we could. I don't know.
You know.
Okay. Was the Holocaust any worse than the time in Egypt?
Right. That's what I'm.
I don't know.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I don't know. But I thought about it as 2000. When the Jews left Egypt, they were also saying, "Why? Why does this happen to us?" Right? And there probably were, you know, the equivalent of what's his name, the hair guy.
Kramer?
No, the Holocaust, the scholar. The equivalent. There's probably.
Not King, and then you said Holocaust.
Right, there is the equivalent of Elie Wiesel wandering around the desert saying, how could this have happened? And probably wrote books saying, you know, the night in Egypt, you know, like what have it brought upon us, you know, and they're philosophizing about it then. And now 2,000 years, then they have the benefit of the Torah, God saying, well, okay, you went through this process in order to teach you the following X, Y, and Z. And whether it was, and it's to ingrain within you this, and maybe the Mitzvah went too far, right, as the Rambam said, or the Ravid said, right, maybe the Mitzvah went too far, but okay, you know, you got whatever you got out of it. So now we're 60 years later, 70 years later. So we have the quote-unquote arrogance to say that we should be able to understand now what the reasons are. We don't really understand why the Jews have to go through. Like, can we really understand why the Jews have to go through Egypt? We can't really understand it, but at least we can live with it. Right, so I think that's how you make peace. It's a little close right now, still. Yeah.
So in Harold Kushner's book, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People, he basically has a philosophy, and I just wonder how it fit in.
Yeah.
At least as I understand it, or it's a bit crazy, is that God allows a certain randomness in the universe.
Yeah. You see, you got hammered for that.
Randomness allows for an Einstein to be born, just as it allows for a Down syndrome child to be born. Like there's a randomness that God allows to happen, which he uses as an explanation in some way for the Holocaust and why bad things happen to good people, because God withdraws in that Kabbalistic view from part of the world in order to make space for us to be here. But there's also a
thing that is we're judging what's happening as bad. God can be thinking, okay, I need this to happen, this to happen, this to happen, this to happen, this to happen for my plan to be fulfilled. And you could look at it as we put a value judgment on what those things are that are happening. You know, there are people who say, this is my Down syndrome kid, I love him, he's perfect, he's made me what I am today. So, somebody might judge that as being a horrible thing, like being about a Down syndrome kid, and the parents say, no, this is the most wonderful thing that could have ever happened to me. So we put value judgments on what happens throughout history.
Right, so sometimes we are entitled to put value judgments on things, because the Torah has given us certain values.
Right.
The Torah has given us the value that murder is bad. So hence somebody who murders 6 million people is probably bad. Right? He got hammered, Rabbi Kushner. I mean, he got, you know, in the Orthodox world was banned, etc. It's not so far from what the Or HaChaim is saying. I mean, the Or HaChaim is permitting some amount of randomness. And that's what he's doing. He's allowing, he's giving into the hands of people the ability to do stuff. God is still in control. I mean, God is still guiding it, so to speak. But he's not fully ingrained with anything. And for that, that would require the work on the talk about Hashgacha Pratit. It doesn't mean that God is really involved with every moment. Right? Does God really say each grass to grow, Christ should grow, or does God not? Right? Does God control whether the Buffalo Bills wide receiver drops a touchdown pass, or does he not? I mean, that's on the other hand, right, it's very frum to say that God does, right? That should be the frum answer. On the other hand, frum people get all upset when you... what do you mean, God cares what's going on in Rich Stadium in Buffalo? Well, why not? Like, you put that beyond God? it's a difficult... I don't know. And yeah, Sheldon.
Maybe there's two different issues. It could be that people are murdering people like the Holocaust, but it could also be a tsunami. It's nothing to do with people's free will, really. It's God's decision that those people are going to be wiped out. So at least there, you have to say, it's probably God's plan. When it comes to the free will, you could say, well, maybe man is pushing the plan in a different direction. It wasn't originally the way.
Okay, well, that's the extension of what the Or HaChaim is saying. The Or HaChaim is saying that why did Reuven take him from the brothers and put him in a pit full of snakes and scorpions, because better that he put, because animals are controlled by God while man is controlled by man. Right, so better that he put him in the control of God rather than the control of man. That's what the Or HaChaim is saying. And it's based on the Zohar. The Nitziv actually quotes that idea from the Zohar. The Zohar says, better that God be that they placed in that situation over the over the alternative. We're not getting into
wouldn't that game you said earlier that if you see two trains hurtling toward each other, you kind of know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you put someone in a pit of lions, you sort of know what's going to happen.
Daniel got
out. Now, granted, you had a couple of times when it didn't happen.
Right.
But...
Right, so at that point they had, you don't know whether they had Nebuah or Ruach HaKosh, whatever, but Reuven knew, I mean, they knew that Yosef was, they got the Nebuah from Yosef himself, right, about the dream. So Reuven knew that Yosef was going to be, so, but it's possible even that Nebuah was not, would not survive the brothers. That's what the Ruach HaKosh is saying. Right, it would survive the snakes and scorpions, but it wouldn't survive the brothers. All right, so we're not discussing also tonight the idea of searching for blame or searching for reason. We didn't go there tonight. We have what to say on that though. All right, thank you for coming.